Good evening. This is the KRFP Evening Report for Wednesday, April 2nd, 2014. I'm Lee Robartis in the news tonight. Prosecutors argue against defense motion to suppress words of Rachel Anderson. Manslaughter trial begins in Spokane for man who shot at another man who was driving away in his stolen vehicle. Logging boundaries at the Oso landslide were the wrong ones, and the Women's Center gives Virginia Woolf Awards at the University of Idaho. We'll have details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report. And live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. The manslaughter trial of a Spokane man who killed another man who stole his sport utility vehicle from his driveway and was driving away began in earnest today after 2 days of jury selection. 56-year-old Gail Gerlach is expected to testify in his own defense that he believed he saw 25-year-old SUV thief Brendan Kaluza Graham point a gun towards him as he was driving away in the vehicle. Gerlach shot at the truck, hitting Kaluza Graham in the back of the head. The truck crashed two blocks away, and Kaluza Graham was found dead at the wheel. Police found no gun in the truck. Defense attorney David Stevens told the jury during opening statements yesterday Gerlach will testify. He recognized Kaluza Graham as the person he shot at, even though a police report says Gerlach was unable to say for sure what gender the person was driving away. Testimony will also likely center on whether or not Gerlach could legitimately claim to feel threatened when he shot. Gerlach is facing 10 years in prison. The confirmed death toll in the Oso mudslide is now 29. Floodwaters are receding at the site of the 300-acre March 22nd slide in rugged Cascade Mountain country in western Washington. Water from the North Fork of the Stillaguamish River has been pooling behind the mudslide debris despite a new channel cut by the river through the slide area. Parts of the slide area were underwater due to heavy rains that have fallen in the 11 days since the slide, but that area is diminishing, opening up more areas to searching. The number of missing people is now 13. Search Supervisor Steve Harris noted 3 miles of the two-lane State Route 530 have been obliterated by the mudslide. The road was the only direct route between the logging town of Darrington and Arlington, located on the plain next to Puget Sound. Washington State Military Department spokesperson Karina Shagrin said a rough estimate of the cost of removing debris from the mudslide is $22 million. The Seattle Times reports the Washington Department of Natural Resources should have prohibited logging on 12 additional acres of the plateau above the slide after a 1997 report by geologist Daniel J. Miller and hydrologist Joan Sias. The Department of Ecology, who commissioned the report, said the Miller-Sias report was state-of-the-art and used newly developed computational tools to map the unstable land. The report mapped the area where groundwater feeds into the unstable slope. Trees absorb rainwater, and when logging goes on in an area, more of the rain is absorbed into the soil. However, when the company Grandy Lake was proposing logging there in 2004, the Department of Natural Resources drew logging boundaries on the plateau using an older 1988 report instead. Maps published by the Seattle Times show 5 acres of the 7.5-acre Grandy Lake clear cut were within the area the Miller-Sias report said should be off limits. That's up from a previous Seattle Times report that said the harvest appeared to take up only 1 acre of land where logging should have been off limits. Geologist Miller told the Seattle Times, "We did the work. It was cited in the prescriptions as what you should do, and it appears from your comparison of the maps that it didn't get done. I suspect it just got lost in the shuffle somewhere." contract geologist Paul Kennard, who did a watershed analysis in the area for the Tulalip tribe, told the Times Grande Lake representatives argued very eloquently and hard for their interests in logging more on the plateau. Kennard said everything had to be argued to the nth degree if it involved leaving a stick of timber. Prosecutors have responded to a motion to suppress statements made by Rachel Anderson before she disappeared almost 4 years ago, having last been seen in Moscow. Anderson's estranged husband, Charles A. Capone, is facing a trial date for the murder of Anderson. Defense attorneys said statements Anderson made during interviews with police should be considered hearsay unless Anderson was called to testify at the trial. The Latah County Prosecutor's Office submitted a document in Second District Court this week saying Rachel Anderson has been missing since April 16, 2010, and the state asserts that she is deceased. She will obviously not be available for trial. At trial, the state anticipates David Stone will testify that he witnessed Charles Capone strangle Rachel Anderson and that he helped Mr. Capone dispose of Ms. Anderson's body. As such, she will not be available for confrontation or cross-examination by the defense. The defense is also asking for a change of venue. Prosecutors argued against moving the case out of Moscow, saying the request is premature and the judge should make a decision about the possibility of a biased jury based on questionnaires that will be given to potential jurors. Washington Governor Jay Inslee says the state will go back to court to get the U.S. Department of Energy to act more quickly in the cleanup at Hanford. Inslee says the Department of Energy's cleanup plan lacks specific detail. The governor is giving the federal government 2 months to come up with a more specific cleanup plan or to act on the one suggested by Washington State. A 2010 settlement in a lawsuit between Washington and the Department of Energy set a number of deadlines, with 2047 given as the date for final cleanup and 2040 given as the date for all radioactive waste to be pumped out of single-walled tanks located along the Columbia River. Noting more missed deadlines, Washington Attorney General Bob Ferguson said Monday, "It is now time to take legal action." A blast Monday morning at the Williams Northwest Pipeline facility on the Washington-Oregon border south of Richland caused the evacuation of 400 people from farms and homes nearby. The Williams Northwest Pipeline facility provides supplemental natural gas for a 4,000-mile-long pipeline that connects Canada and southern Utah. Residents reported feeling the blast a mile away, and the explosion prompted farm animals in the area to run around. 4 workers at the facility were injured, 3 were treated at Good Shepherd Medical Center in Hermiston, Oregon, and 1 was transported to a Portland hospital for treatment of burns. The 8:20 a.m. blast punctured one of 2 giant liquefied natural gas tanks at the site. Longtime Republican Secretary of State Ben Assersa has endorsed Phil McGrane as in the race to be his successor for the statewide Idaho post. McGrane is the chief deputy Ada County clerk, which includes experience in elections that Assersa pointed out in his endorsement. The 3 other Secretary of State candidates in next month's Republican primary are former House Speaker Lawrence Denny of Midvale, former State Senator Mitch Toriansky of Boise, and former State Senator and former Redistricting Commission member Evan Frazier of Pocatello. The Democrat in the race is State Representative Holly Woodings of Boise. Yesterday's Women's Center program, celebrating the 40th anniversary of the reconciliation agreement that created the University of Idaho Women's Center, included presentations of the Virginia Woolf Awards to those who made efforts towards gender equity in Moscow and the UI community in the last year. Deb Payne of Alternatives to Violence of the Palouse received the Community Award. University of Idaho student newspaper Argonaut managing editor Caitlin Maroney received the Student Award, and University of Idaho College Assistant Migrant Program Director Yolanda Bisbee received the Faculty Staff Award. Here's Jesse Martinez introducing the Virginia Woolf Award for Yolanda Bisbee.
I have known Dr. Yolanda Bisbee since my arrival here at the University of Idaho, which is over 14 years ago. She is someone that I have the utmost respect, as she has helped me personally and professionally to grow. But most importantly, she has helped many campus women grow personally and professionally. Yolanda has worked here at the University of Idaho for over 20 years. She has served at the University of Idaho in different capacities, from an administrative assistant, residential counselor, program coordinator, and as for the past 10 years, as a camp director. In every position that she has held, Yolanda has always been a great role model and inspiration for many young multicultural women. She received her bachelor's, master's, and just recently, her doctoral degree from the University of Idaho. Her journey in completing her doctorate of education was not an easy one. She was a first-generation single mother, maneuvering herself through the academic realm. As she has shared with all of her female students, no matter how difficult the obstacles that we encounter, it is very important to continue one's education and be independent. And this will result in happiness and fulfilling in the long run. Yolanda's story is one of persistence, determination, and motivation, which makes her the perfect person for this award and for her current position, which is the camp director. Yolanda has not only touched thousands of women's lives at the University of Idaho, but also in the Native American and Hispanic communities. But she has definitely changed their lives for the best. As a male recruiter, I know firsthand the difficulties that there is in recruiting young women to the University of Idaho, especially in Latino and Native American communities. Yolanda has been a key liaison in this work. The main reason why many of our young Latina and Native American students have enrolled at the University of Idaho is because of her work and passion. Many parents of multicultural female students are not comfortable with the idea of their daughter leaving home to go far away without building any relationships with a female representative from the institution. As soon as they speak to Yolanda, they feel the trust and support she will provide to their daughters. She plays a huge role in many traditional Latino and Native American families in agreeing to support their daughter's dream to go to get a college education. Due to the mentoring and the support that Yolanda provides to students, she is known to many as Big Mama. A significant number of multicultural recruitment and retention successes at the University of Idaho can be attributed to Yolanda's vision and foundational work. But most significant is the unwavering commitment to these young women. A few years after camp was funded at the University of Idaho, a group of young women, multicultural women, felt that their voices was not being represented on campus. They asked their mentor, Yolanda, to be an advisor of a newly formed campus chapter of Women of Color Alliance. Yolanda saw this as an opportunity to support and foster a welcoming environment for multicultural women attending the University of Idaho, and accepted the request. Yolanda is inspiring not just to students, but also to many men and women in the education profession. I have witnessed Yolanda take on leadership roles in various campus organizations and committees. She is often one of the few women representatives at the table among many men. Her presence and expertise radiates throughout the meetings, and she speaks her mind without fear of holding back. Yolanda brings a critical and important perspective that too often goes unvoiced at this institution. She is passionate in her career and is always making sure that cultural barriers are destroyed in order to create a welcoming and safe environment for all. Please join me in congratulating my friend and colleague, Dr. Yolanda Bisbee, as a recipient of the 2014 Virginia Woolf Distinguished Service Award in faculty and staff category.
That was Jesse Martinez introducing Yolanda Bisbee, who won the Virginia Woolf Award in the faculty staff category. UI student media advisor Sean O'Neill introduced Argonaut managing editor Caitlin Maroney, who won in the student category.
Some of my favorite Maroney moments are when anybody suggests that she should be home caring for her child as opposed to working on her craft. It is then when she is at her best, pointed, funny, and ferocious, and she reminds me why I love my job so much. She's a tremendous manager for our newsroom and a willing public face for feminism through her Friday F-word columns, where she skillfully analyzes issues from a perspective of inclusivity and occasionally skewers whatever happens to need it at that time. And that's a beautiful thing, especially in a state like Idaho. As any movement... As any movement that has Caitlin Maroney in its corner has a powerful force within its ranks.
Christine Wall introduced Virginia Woolf Award winner Deb Payne of Alternatives to Violence of the Palouse. She won in the community category.
Deb worked in the Idaho Cedar Mills in Troy for 20 years. 10 of those years as the only woman in this very male-dominated industry. As you can imagine, gender justice, equality, not even up for discussion. Deb's strong sense of self and innate leadership qualities resulted in numerous job successes, as well as leaving the mill with the respect of those that she had worked with. Deb upholds the tenets of activism and gender justice, and 15 years ago she was able to transfer these to her professional life. First working for Planned Parenthood, and currently with Alternatives to Violence of the Palouse. Deb has worked for ATVP for over 11 years. She works for us in an administrative role. She is a key member of our team. Deb carries out any number of administrative activities that are essential to shore up a nonprofit business. This is no mean feat, given that ATVP has currently 20 funding sources, all with wildly different requirements. Her hard work, diligence, willingness to go the extra mile, and turn her hand at whatever is needed has ensured that ATVP has been consistent in securing and successfully managing crisis intervention and prevention programming grants that address gender violence right here on the Palouse. Beyond her given role, Deb has assumed another over the years, that of role model and mentor to young women and men who join ATVP to work on the front lines to address misogyny, sexism, and gendered violence. Deb has helped to nurture and sustain young women and young men as they learn and grow in addressing these issues firsthand. Deb is always readily available, generous in her support, and kind in her advice. Without a doubt, Deb's influence has and will continue to sustain future activists' dedication to gender justice. Deb truly is a hidden gem.
That was Christine Wall introducing Virginia Woolf Award winner Deb Payne of Alternatives to Violence of the Palouse at yesterday's UI Women's Center Reconciliation Agreement 40th Anniversary Celebration, which took place in the Student Union Building. Well, that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather from the National Weather Service, partly cloudy, low 34, west winds 10 to 15, gusts up to 20, increasing clouds tomorrow, high 57, 60% chance of rain Thursday night, mainly after midnight, mostly cloudy, low 38, 60% chance of showers on Friday, mainly in the afternoon, cloudy, high 52, and 40% chance of showers Friday night, mainly before midnight, mostly cloudy, low 35. 60% chance of showers Saturday, mainly in the afternoon, cloudy, high 52. Currently at the Pullman Moscow Regional Airport, fair skies, 50 degrees. Thanks for tuning into the KRFP Evening Report. Coming up next, the weekly news magazine Between the Lines, followed by Flashpoints, the daily investigative news magazine from Pacifica Radio at 6:30. And then at 7:30, This Way Out, the International Gay and Lesbian News News Magazine. At 8 o'clock, music begins with World Wave with Catherine Bonzo. Music and entertainment throughout the night here at KRFP. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, plus the newscasts you hear during Morning Mix, the recordings of local events and the public affairs shows, plus the music and arts programming you hear every day on Radio Free Moscow, be sure to become a member of Radio Free Moscow. Memberships are $35 a year, $20 for students and low income. You can mail your memberships to Radio Free Moscow, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. That's Radio Free Moscow, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. Or you can go to the Radio Free Moscow website to find out more ways to help Radio Free Moscow. I'm Lee Robartis. Have a good night. This is KRFP, Moscow Pullman, 90.3, community radio for the Palouse.